listening to Journeys on Revolution Radio on freedomslips.com and simulcast with wolfspiritradio.com. Join JP, your tour guide today, on this journey of discovery from the known to the unknown in search of enlightenment, knowledge, and truth.
Yes, yes, yes. Speaking from Scotland, this thing goes on for quite a while, doesn't it? Speaking from Scotland, this is JP. Welcome to Journeys once again. Today, March the 24th, I believe. Yeah, March the 24th, it says here. And time seems to be marching on, doesn't it? I know it's March, but here we are. We're in spring already, and we're all dreading this terrible winter, and nothing happened. Worse than the end of the world is a really bad winter. You know, you stock up. So you have to eat the stuff that you've eaten, that you've been stocking up on. And, I got plenty of kale. If anyone wants to come around and, have kale and, oh my God, I made some carrots. I tried to make carrot juice. I blew up my carrot juicer today, because I stuffed so many carrots in it. People have been giving me, they bring carrots around thinking that I love eating carrots, and every meal I cut up some carrots and I boil them up, and, actually I don't. The carrots just stack up in the corner, and, I was thinking, I've now got 4 bags of carrots. What do I do with the carrots? I've created loads of, I created much carrot juice, and then the thing broke down, so then I had some, carrot pulp. I made a curry with that, and it's a kind of orange curry with a kind of fishy flavour, with very strong lots of curry powder and tomato in it to disguise the fact that it's mostly carrot pulp. Anyway, I hope that's what I'm going to be eating all week. It's going to be like a kind of penance for blowing up the carrot machine. Anyway, welcome to Journeys. I would like to tonight do some readings. I haven't done some readings for a few weeks. If you can call in, you can call in on 310-421-4053. Studio B number. You can also call in, I think, on the Wolf Spirit radio phone. And I can't remember what the heck that is at all. Dave, you can drop it in a little while. Cause it used to be, I used to know the number, and I got used to the number, and I now don't have that number to hand because that number's got the, it's all changed now. But I know that if you want to connect with Skype, when Skype is better, I prefer Skype because you can just put the phone down and stand away from it and talk at it. And that's the way we should communicate with each other, not sort of up against each other's ears like this. Surely we stand with a personal distance between us. There you go, that's the way it is. Anyway, but you can call in. I know that on Studio A is Courtney Brown talking. Actually, we were talking about him last week because we were talking about the pyramid construction video. I was discussing that with Nancy Hopkins, and it was quite interesting. So if anybody wants to discuss, we can talk about Courtney on the other channel while he's doing the show on the other thing with Lauren. Anyway, if anybody's interested, I'd love to talk pyramids and why and when and how and who. It's one of the big debates. I was talking in the previous show. I was just producing and actually co-hosting with Steve. It was a sort of Robin and Alfred show, Via and Linnea show. We were discussing the Black Knights, these ancient satellites that have apparently been here for at least 13,000 years, and what they are and what they do and why they were here. And then that came up with the old story, the very old story from the Vedas, of the time-traveling hyperdimensional criminals who came from the future into the past and have then created tyranny throughout the whole galaxy, because they went into the past and have built up the empires since then. And that's what we're existing in at the moment. We're in this very dark place because it's the culmination of all of their work. Since the last civilization of 13,000 years ago, they've been ferreting away under the ground and doing things in a slightly more covert way. And, hopefully for them, trying to get everything so that they can get out at this juncture. However, you know, everybody's waiting for them outside the gates, and outside the fence. So there's not much chance that they're going to escape. But one of the stories, and this is a fascinating story, and it's all to do with what Michael Cerin calls the origin of evil on Earth. And one of the ideas, all right, so here's the story, is that we go back. Let's go just briefly back. Michael Tellinger has done a lot of this work. South African, fantastic. He found the place of Enki, the place where all the gold was mined, and it's so big that nobody noticed it was the most ancient site on the planet, and it goes back at least 400,000 years, if not a million years, and it's round buildings that surround all the gold mines, and it was obviously the civilization that was around it, and that it was quite a nice place to live, apparently, according to Tellinger and what he's dug up, and it was all based on sound and harmonics, and they wouldn't kind of hack out the gold. They would use sound to extract it. And that's very interesting, going back to the Courtney thing. Courtney Brown's one of his remote viewers was looking at the pyramid and how it was constructed, and he was saying that there were blocks of stone that were moved, and they were floating 18 inches off the ground, and they were being pushed around and pulled around by ropes, but they were floating off the ground because of some kind of what he called sound plus. So some kind of acoustic levitation process was going on there, perhaps electromagnetic and acoustic, or maybe scalar and acoustic, or something, some combination that we haven't quite discovered yet, but I'm sure that we'll be able to rediscover one day. And that's probably why they're in Afghanistan and Iraq and all these other places and Crimea, to get technology like that, levitation and obviously beam, you know, ray beam technology to wipe out an enemy and things like that. So we got this civilization that was coming up about 400,000 odd years ago, and this is the story that is connected with the Sitchin type material, where they're talking about the old stories of how people got here, and the story of Enki and Enlil and Ninhursag and their father Anu and all this. This is way before. This is way in the past now. This is like 350,000 years ago, and then this other group arrives again, like we say, through the sun as a time portal. Now this story is like a really old story, 6,000 odd years old, and it's all over India. It's not like something that is like a secret book. It's like the Vedas. Anyway. In this story, they have these guys, and they're coming through, and they put a decoy on the planet, which is called Maldek, and this planet has a lot of water and an indigenous population of people we call Sasquatch, and everybody's living in harmony, and everything's really cool. They have pyramids there, and they could use pyramids for interplanetary travel. When your pyramid and the other pyramid were pointing to each other, you'd go in there and you'd be transferred. And I think that's to do with ionic streams. I'm learning about this sort of thing at the moment. I'm downloading the information about that. So about 50,000 years ago, these guys come through the sun. They come out and, they're looking for somewhere to hang and to hide, because, you know, they knew that they would be followed. So they went to this large, bright planet. It must have been very bright because it was water like a crystal. And they put a decoy there. Something that looked like a base. Something that sent out the signals of a base. And then they scuttled off and they found themselves on Earth. And, which at that time had this, this population of these, semi-intelligent, helper miner people, obviously very friendly. And these guys are tall as well. And, and so I imagine that that these little people, lovely, trusting, beautiful little people would go up to them and said, "Oh, are you our gods then?" And they'd look down and say, "Yeah, we're your gods, and we got some new work for you to do." You know, you can imagine how that scenario might work out, that these people are very innocent and trusting, because they weren't built to be devious. They weren't modified, but they did soon get modified, and this is how we find ourselves with, you know, the modern human, with the lack of telepathy, with the lack of, with the separation. This is where it starts happening. Well, it probably happened before that, but this is one of the big traumas that happens to the human race. We're implanted and GMO'd, and it's a very traumatic thing, and enslaved. And that's how it's been kind of ever since. And this is what we call the Atlantis. And then there was this other group around that was called Lemuria. And it's really about a time rather than a place, because it's all over the planet. Potentially a much smaller planet as well. Or slightly smaller, maybe, at this time. But one of the stories of destruction of Atlantis was when the Straits of Gibraltar separated due to planetary expansion. The Mediterranean used to be an inland sea, and it was a valley, like with lakes and things at the bottom, and civilizations. And one of the main branches of Atlantis is now at the base of the mountain, the tip of which is now called Cyprus. And there were very much cultivated fields at the underneath. And I was involved a few years ago. It's a long story. My ex-wife was involved when she was living out there in Cyprus, and it was a search for Atlantis, and people who were fans of the Urantia book decided that just off the coast of Cyprus was a point where they could look down, and sure enough, they found a wall a mile under the water that showed that there was like a some kind of man-made, non-natural formation down there. They didn't exactly find the city of Atlantis. I'm not entirely sure that it was in fact there, but I was pretty sure that there were civilizations there at the time at the bottom of what we now call the Mediterranean. And I think there was a whole valley there that has been completely lost to mankind because it's now under the sea. So, meanwhile, we get these people arriving on our planet. Now it's quite a turbulent place, and actually, what okay, so what happens is they find themselves on the planet. The fleet come chasing after them. Again, they come through the sun. They're looking everywhere. They know they came here somewhere, and the first thing they see is this big, bright. There's Wally. Hey, Wally.
Hey, JP.
Okay, let me finish my story for a bit, and then I'll join you in. So the first thing they see is this big bright bauble, which is called Maldek, and they think, well, there's a good idea. Let's get let's get them and let's destroy this planet completely. Let's wipe them out. Because these people were supposed to be annihilated. They weren't supposed to escape. They were, you know, they were going to be kind of brain wiped and sent back to the source of the galaxy and all that stuff. But they escaped. They got a thing about staying in the body. Anyway, so they are chased and finally caught in the solar system, and they go after the big bright bauble, Maldek, and they find some base, so they destroy the base. But some of the crew go and look at some of the other planets, because they weren't, that was like too obvious, that was too easy. And so some of the crew find that there was a that there was a trace of their ship that went down on Earth, and signals back to say that they found them on Earth. However, by the time that signal arrived, it was too late. Impatience and amateurishness got the better of everybody, because I mean, these were a bunch of like space hippies, you know, trying to find some criminals. Everything was good until then. Anyway, so they found that there were people that were on the Earth, and the problem is that the ship had decided, the captain of the ship had decided to destroy the planet. It had a, you know, it was a massive ship. It had the capability. And so they blew Maldek up because they thought they were on there. It was a decoy. They made a big mistake. All right? And the bigger the mistake, this they didn't realize, because what happens is, imagine in space you take a shotgun and you blow a bag of water up. It's going to go in every direction. It may be drawn towards the gravitational pull of the solar system, but however, in the confines of the solar system, as we're being swept behind the sun, it went everywhere. It was everywhere. There were flying pieces, flying globules of water. Since then, this water has variously arrived at different parts of the solar system. There's one point which is called the Kuiper Belt. There is another point which is called the Asteroid Belt. And there is another phenomenon which is known as Fortean phenomenon, after the gentleman Charles Fort, F-O-R-T, who was the first person to kind of pull all these stories together and say, hey, there's something weird up there. And basically, he collected all the stories of fish falling from the sky, frogs falling from the sky, all sorts of stuff, water in space. And what was all that about? I believe these are the remnants of this planet, Maldek. Now, what happened since then is that these beings, and I think there were probably 13, a dozen to 13 of them, they were tall, they resembled the descriptions of the original creators, and obviously basically hijacked the whole thing. And oh, the one thing that I forgot is that everybody had to go, because there was water flying everywhere. Everybody had to go, so they put in a planetary defense system that stopped people getting off the planet, the so-called quarantine. And it's not because of us, and it's because of them. And probably now because of what they've done to us, because they basically reprogrammed us, turned us into semi-robots that behave like them. And we need to unlearn a lot of that behavior. We need to unlearn a lot of our history, because it's not true. So, I'll put a pin in that story if anybody wants me to carry on. That's the story of how it got here, how they got here, and probably why some of us also are here. Wally, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, JP. How are you on this fine evening here in the States?
Very good. Well, it's a very dark and, hang on, start, yep, I just look over there and I can see, That'll be Jupiter up there, I think. Maybe Saturn. I have to check on Stellarium to see which one it is, but I can just see a star, something or a planet sticking out my window. So, how is your good self, Wally?
Very well. Very well. We're dark here also. 21 degrees and wind blowing. It's really cold. Still snow on the ground. Usually by now we're supposed to be in the 40s, but we're just getting the tests.
Correction, it's Mars. Mars is really bright. Is that Mars? Bright. It's very red. Very red and very bright. I thought it was Saturn. Saturn's only just arrived. Hang on, let's see Saturn. No, Saturn's just behind the forest line. So we got about 20 degrees of forest before I see the sky. But anyway, how are you doing, sir?
Good. Interesting conversation with Steve on Sean's program. A couple of things I wanted to comment. I liked his little remark back to the police officer. In fact, we're dealing with the insurance company. You know, insurance companies just don't want to pay out, especially large claims. And when Steve had said what he said to the officer, I called Mother down in Florida, and I says, Ma, use the word home. Welcome to my home away from home. Because they don't think we had the stuff, and they're sending an adjuster out to look at the damage that they did when they broke in. And I mean, this has been going on for 2.5 years. And so I said, just try it. You know, and she's a very devout Catholic, so, you know, when I told her what I was getting at, well, I don't really know if I want, I might just try it. See if any attitudes change. The one from the main insurance company, because our insurance company, or our attorney is going to be there, our investor is going to be there. They're the attorney for the insurance company, and the insurance company adjuster is going to be there. And I said, just try that once. Just say welcome when they welcome the insurance company adjuster and attorney. Just say welcome to my home away from home. So that was kind of interesting. Because we are going through some tests, as Steve was saying on there. So, you know, I listen.
So, yeah, the whole home, the sound of home. Imagine if you were to just say home, home, home. In fact, I have a mug, you know, that I drink my tea from. And people will see it on Facebook. Because it says, there's no place like home. It's my favorite mug, and I drink my favorite tea from it. So, there's no sound like home.
You know, and it made the way you guys talked and what Steve's lady friend had said to him about, you know, what he had said, that made a lot of sense. And, you know, more people have to start utilizing sounds in the words, using words with the right sounds.
Yeah, well, you know, this is something, again, that he was talking about, Kate of Gaia was talking about, and it's all about the phonemes and the phonetians and, all these words that pop up, that come from history, that have been here forever. Words, I like to say, my favorite word is arc. I think arc is a very, very ancient word, and it means the same thing wherever you go, and it's the shape of a spark. You see? Because a spark is an arc.
Well, it pertains to a lot, exactly. You know, you're talking about like the Ark of the Covenant,
yep.
The Our Father. If you listen and pronounce each word in the Lord's Prayer, the Our Father, it also has the sounds.
Yeah, this is very interesting, actually. The sound of God, the name for God, in many languages always has this ah. And ah is, when you say ah, then you're talking from your heart. It's your heart.
Yes.
Amor. You know? Exactly. So let's look at Allah. Okay? Our Father. Yahweh, Jehovah, you know,
yeah.
Buddha, yeah, Where have you been, you know, Imam Mahdi? Jesus. You know? It's there. It's hidden. It's hidden, but it's there all the time, and it's like a pivot point around all spiritual beliefs. And it's really, there is no belief, it's about the sound. It's really, really, really all about the sound.
Right. The words you use and the way you pronounce them, the way you say them to bring the words out.
Mm.
Is that echoing back to me?
Yeah, it will echo when my mic is open.
Oh, okay. But I just thought that was real fascinating, when you guys were talking about that, and a lot of things were going through my mind, and yeah, we gotta get back into pronouncing the words with the sounds. Cause I've been doing, color therapy on my eyes, magenta and lemon, and I have these glasses that flash. I have a Muse program that goes with this flashing unit, and I don't know why I didn't think of this sooner. But I have a book at Color Me Healthy. It's called Spectrograph, Healing with Colors. And Dr. Roan, who I pay attention to, he had a newsletter called The Second Opinion. And he's now starting to look into, in fact, he healed a lady's gallbladder with color. And color and sounds are healing. And so I've been... You know, I come from a drug dealing family, and I refuse to take those because they're not going to use me as a guinea pig.
That's right. So, have you come across any of my shows with Shari Edwards?
Yes, I have.
So you understand that she's using frequency in the audio spectrum.
Exactly.
One of the things that I've been wondering about. Because, you know, I'm interested in frequencies at all levels, so radios, music, and all that stuff. But one of the things that I'm interested in, hi Mona, if you could hold the line, please. One of the things that I've been interested in is to, and it's a project that I've got in the back of my mind that I've got the bits for. I just need the time. Just give me some time. I seem to have no time. Tomorrow, I'm going to do nothing for anybody. If anybody comes around, I'm going to keep the door closed. That's a warning, by the way.
Serve them carrots.
I'll leave some carrot juice outside. I've got a bottle of carrot juice now, and he didn't like it. My son didn't like the carrot and white fish sweet corn curry that I made from it. It's quite tasty, and it was a little like napalm when you ate it. It was much hotter than you think it ought to have been. So, I tasted all right, and it'll keep you regular. Anyway.
I used to drink a lot of carrot juice, and I started turning orange, so I had to back off from it a little bit.
Yeah, that's probably the way. Mona, hey. What's up?
I don't want to be echoing if I can help it.
Are you boring? Did I lose you? Sounds like you got a kettle boiling in the background.
Oh, it just might be my computer. It's like all day. It's been an all day. But it's also intent behind what the verbiage is. And people don't realize how we create our essences by the words that we've been trained to use. Like sorry builds sorrow. Can't builds denial. You know, people really just have no clue that they just shrug it off like there's nothing behind it. And that's what creates our everyday essence. Am I there? Are you there?
Yeah, we're there. But I have to mute my mic. I have to mute my mind as well. I have to mute my mic if you speak. So it'll take a while for me to respond because I have to then think, fade up mic, then speak. So now, having explained that, I've lost the point completely of what I was going to say in response to that. But we were talking about phonemes, weren't we?
You might want to consider that. We, I think, say it here as phonics.
Phonics, yes. And, and Kate's been saying, you know, this is to do with the Phoenicians. And who were the Phoenicians? Do you know anything about that lot?
Sounds something like close to Pleiades to me, you know, take a left. I really have no clue.
All right.
At first I heard it when you were on your show.
All right. Well, you should, you can check out the Phoenicians because they invented maritime, basically. That's their whole thing. They were the sailors and the merchant, seamen or all that stuff. Interesting. I wonder where they came from. Yes, perhaps they came from the Pleiades. Perhaps the Pleiadians are the Phoenicians. Who knows? We're still working out what that story is. Have either of you heard that story that I was talking about?
No, but it was very interesting. I was enjoying listening to it. I wonder if that's where the, you know, the being of the sea, they talk about the sighing, the mermaids that sang the ships and sailors into the rocks. I wonder if that has something to do with that.
Well, maybe. I don't think we're alone. Sense. I don't think we're alone on this planet. And I don't think anybody here in this radio station or chat room either does. And who knows? You know, they say the universe is not only stranger than you imagine, it's stranger than you can imagine. It's more than, you know, that there's things that are so beyond our ability to imagine what is real and what is a life form, you know. We don't even acknowledge our fellow men, our fellow women, other human beings as life forms right now. There are people on this planet who don't acknowledge other peoples, and these people, we call them Nazis and or fascists or something like that. But it's a psychopathic mentality that has to go.
Didn't Steve call them the good Nazis?
Well, no, because the good Nazis don't have that. That's the thing. The good Nazis have internalized all of the good aspects. I mean, because there were. I mean, the trains ran on time. They always say, you know, the trains ran on time. You know, with the Nazis, at least the trains ran on time. Because in Britain, the trains never run on time. There's always some excuse, and it's lame, and it's a national joke. But there was a striving for perfection in the Nazi movement. And in a way, that's a spiritual aspiration. So in a way, they've done a lot of the work that people do for their spirit. Now, they need to develop their compassion, right? We've got all the compassion to spare. We need some of their help because they're stronger, they're fitter, they're more intelligent than us. Because they've been bred and reprogrammed that way, but they need to learn compassion, and that's what we can give them.
Don't you think it's more an unconditional love kind of thing, of a respect, to not have a power play of competition that just makes everything crazy?
That's all summed up by the word compassion, my dear. Yeah, all of those things. Compassion is the action of the heart. It's the action of understanding, of knowing where somebody's coming from, having experienced the same experience, being able to put yourself in their position. And if you can do that, there's all of those other things that you said all drop out into the wash.
You know, I've got a good teacher of teaching me what words to use and how to use words and what words not to use, and I just think that is so wonderful, because I never really thought of, you know, the words we speak and what we can manifest with the language we use. I don't swear, and occasionally, but it's just something that I've kind of bred out, because the more this teacher tells me about the words I speak, the more I think now before I speak, so I use the proper words.
It's always, it's an interesting thing, because it's a bit like one of these detoxes. We have to detox our mind. We have to detox our mouth. We're all conditioned. We're all given toxin. You know, conditioning is toxin. It's toxin for the mind. So, we have to, unprogram that toxic programming. We also have to unprogram that toxic way of being. Where it's it's okay to be aggressive, because it isn't. You know, nobody likes it. That's why all the animals run away from humans, because we've got that aggressive energy about us, and that aggressive energy is because of these implants and these parasites that reside within us that draw our energy. I'm not just talking tapeworms. Tapeworms is a very obvious form, but there are forms of parasitic mind thing that exist that take our mind stuff. There are forms of parasitic emotional thing that, you know, people call demons or mind thought forms or whatever you might call them, but they are designed to remove energy from us. And, you know, we have to detox on all the different levels. And, you know, not swearing so much is a good thing.
It's improper use of the language.
Yeah, and you call it cursing, and that's what's happening. You know, Scotland people, they curse a lot here. They curse like breathing, and you kind of get used to it, but in a way I can never really get used to that. It's like I'd have to tidy up afterwards. All right, bye.
That's the way
I just get the broom out, you know?
Yeah, that's how I feel with the GD and the damn. Those two words are just like curdling to my hearing. But otherwise, you also said something too that I'd like to bring to your attention. That you said you understand. Well, what are you going to stand under? Are you going to stand under it, or beside it, or over it, or with it? So, you know.
That was a good one, Mama.
I'm going to embrace it. Embrace is the unconditional form. Embrace is the love form of all that. Okay? You can embrace something, you don't have to like it, you love it, but you don't have to like it. But you can embrace it and just accept it as real and there in your space. Undeniable. You know, and this is the thing that people don't do, and it would be so easy to do. Oh, look, here's Thomas. Greetings, Thomas. You're live on the air on Revolution Radio. Welcome to Journeys with Wally and Mona. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
I'm all right. Did you expect that?
No, I didn't.
You should know my schedule by now, my friend.
I should, but, you know.
I've been doing it for the last couple of years, Monday nights. Anyway, how are you doing? What's news from Sasquatch World?
Not much of anything. Just trying to keep my head above water with all the stuff that's going on.
Stuff? Fault. What kind of stuff?
Well, every day there's stuff going on. Some. Today it may be this, and tomorrow it may be that, but every day it's something, and this body I'm in is just going downhill faster and faster and faster.
And, is that your new regime didn't have the desired effect then?
Well, it's not kicking in, and I've been on the diet for almost 2 months now. It's not working.
Hmm.
And why? Pardon me. I didn't mean to yell.
It's okay.
You were with Rebecca on the other night, right? With JP?
Yes, I was.
Okay, because otherwise, can you type in the Skype chat so I don't have to echo over the thing to know what you're feeling and going through?
Well, not really, but I can talk about it. I mean, it would take me forever to type it.
Just talk about
okay.
it. Tell us how you are. I mean, what's really going on for you? Because, you know, we know that you're not well, and you've been brave, and, yeah. I've some space there.
I've got multiple sclerosis, and right now my legs are extremely weak, so I make it to the bathroom and back, and that's about it. I can't do anything else. I can't even sit in a chair for more than 30 or 40 minutes, and I'm exhausted. I have to get back in bed. And,
Thomas,
yes.
Have you tried zeolite products that contain zeolites?
But I've tried lots of stuff, and just to be honest with you, I'm ready to go. I'm ready to get out of here.
Well, the zeolites are a cage-like structure formed when usually lava rock hits either salt water or fresh water, and they're a toxin remover, and there's a lot of studies. Rick Deitch from Nutri-Pharma Corporation has done a lot of study with zeolites, and he micronized them to where they go into the bloodstream and grab onto your lead, your cadmium, your arsenic, and different things. It's just something to look at, but I understand. In fact, I listened to you on Becca the other night, and I thought that was just fantastic. In fact, I asked JP to send my information over to you, and I was so glad when I seen you come on and heard that voice.
Huh. Well, I didn't know I was going to be part of the show.
Colloidal silver.
Well, that's great if there's any kind of infection or anything in the body. I've used colloidal silver before, but no, this is multiple sclerosis. This is where my own immune system attacks me.
Right, it's like a lupus.
Lupus, I guess.
Lupus does the same thing. Mm-hmm.
Well, the immune
system. I think
system.
It's affecting a lot of people because of the fluoride, actually.
Well, I don't honestly care what it is. I'd say the pharmacy and medical industry screwed me up worse than anything else. The shots they had me taking for 5 years really wiped this body out, so I'm on borrowed time.
It's mostly, I'm just looking in, and that, you know, it's the shots, it's the so-called medicines that they've tried to so-called cure you with, or not cure you, just keep you ill. I mean, it's sick, and I'm so sorry, Thomas. I'm really so sorry.
Well, I'm just ready to go, and if I have to stay here much longer, I may just go ahead and take myself out.
But I think you're going to be around for the event. I think that you're not getting away with it.
Oh, well. Hopefully the event's very soon.
Yeah, well, so it might be very soon. What do your people say? I mean, they keep saying, everybody keeps saying soon, soon, soon. How soon is now?
Well, that's a really good question that none of them can seem to answer for me, but some of them have informed me that they're very close to me right now, so that when it's time, they can grab me and pull me out of here. So I know it's not that far away.
Can I, is there times I can make contact with you? I'd like to learn a bit from you before you go.
Certainly.
Which usually, I'm in Michigan, I'm in Eastern time.
Well, I'm usually up by, I don't know, around 8 o'clock in the morning, and I stay up until 8 or 9 o'clock at night, then I go to sleep. Okay.
I take it you're in the Eastern time zone too?
No, I'm Central, I'm in Texas.
Okay. Oh, okay. Alright, yeah, it was just so fascinating listening to you the other night. I wanted to call in there, but, you know, when you get a lot of people in, there's just not a lot of time for the people to really get out and say what they really need to say, and that day was a day for listening for me, and I knew we would meet sometime, Thomas, and what a wonderful, wonderful thing I heard the other day. I just thought that was just fantastic.
Well, I've been on Rebecca's show before, but she seemed to want to get me on one more time before I'm gone. So it ain't going to be much longer for me.
Okay.
It's amazing sometimes how we don't always get what we want.
I try so hard. Get what you need. Paul,
if you could see his picture, it's the most beautiful picture of herd of bison. And I don't see a white one, though. But, it's all in prayer, and now I can say the prayer. Wally has an idea what I mean, because prayer to me is not like an affirmation where you're making something. You're giving thanks. To me, prayer is giving thanks. And you got a whole bunch of giving thanks running across your picture here, Thomas. I like it.
Those are woodland buffalo up in Canada, not the plains bison. So they're bigger. And,
well, if my notebook was bigger, they'd be bigger for me to see.
Yeah, the woodland bison are a bull buffalo on the plains usually weighs around 2,300 pounds on average, but the woodland bison, a bull, usually weighs around 2,600 pounds or more. So they're bigger.
Better foliage?
Nice. What's that?
And they get better foliage, you know, for the fat and the food, because they graze on different kind of foliage.
Yeah, they don't limit themselves to grass, which is what the plains bison are limited to most of the time. They eat leaves and sticks on small bushes and all sorts of things besides just grass.
Mm-hmm. Now, is that where you're from?
No, I've lived my whole life here in Texas in this body.
Well,
but I've got friends in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
However.
So where do you...
Oh, sorry, Mark. No, go on. You got one more question.
Sorry. It's all good, because I hear he gets to play with the happy people in another dimension, and I've had a few Florida experiences. I guess down there we called them Yetis. And basically it's like the first thing that gets you is the smell.
Yeah, there's a nickname for him in Florida, skunk ape.
An East Coast, West Coast Florida thing, because...
Well, that's all I've ever heard from Florida. What to do is because it's so hot. They have body odor. To cover their own body odor, they rub swamp mud on themselves. There he is. And, of course, swamp mud is pretty nasty smelling. That's why they named it.
Yeah, swamp mud, that's the stuff that smells like sewage, doesn't it? Like when your drains are blocked. It smells like when your drains are blocked.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, I know that smell. It's been one of my afflictions. It's like, you know, here comes Satan. Up come my drains, you know, when I'm getting a bit of psychic attack going on. Yeah. I've got to be kidding. Anyway, so, Thomas, this gives us a little insight because, you know, my favorite subject, Thomas, ancient history and where we come from and all this stuff. And I know you're often a little uncomfortable about it, but one of the things, one of the little pieces of the big puzzle that I received from you, one of the many pieces that I've received from you, thank you, the Sasquatch people used pyramids to communicate and to transport themselves from one place to another, and also that the Sasquatch previously lived on the water planet, which was destroyed 50,000 years ago.
Yes. Yes. They did. And they took refuge here because they already had a presence on this planet, and they also had relations with the humans that live on the planet, so they migrated here before that planet was broken apart.
So in terms of, like, immigration policy, is there a kind of interplanetary integrated immigration policy? I mean, are people allowed to just settle on whatever planet they want to? What's the deal?
Well, that depends on whether they're still in a body or not, and it also depends on their choice, if they want to stay in this solar system or not, or even in this galaxy for that matter, or even in this uni of the multiverse. They're just like Nirvana said, in Asia, there is no ending and there is no beginning. It always is.
Wasn't that in the Ronan Keating song as well?
Probably was.
So we were, we got these neighbors, the Sasquatch family are not the Coneheads, are they? That Karen Hood is talking about.
No,
so we're talking like there's a, you know, it's getting pretty crowded here. We got the people from the Hollow Earth. We got the subterraneans, the subterrestrials, the surface dwelling terrestrials, and we think we're the only people here.
Yeah.
And indeed, like, even the surface is covered with lots of other people.
Well, and all of life has its own consciousness. And if you can just allow yourself to accept it, you can start communicating with them. For instance, plants. Plants will tell you a lot of stuff. Especially if, you know, that's how the Sasquatch people are able to know, aside from other ways of knowing, but that's how they know when someone is in the woods. Because they have communication with the trees and the bushes, and they tell the Sasquatch people when a human is in the woods. Same thing that the crows do. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
I call the crows the hoodlums of the sky.
Yes. They're universal law. They just call the shots as they see them.
Exactly. Exactly.
And they just see more realms. And you give a good heartfelt understanding to that story. Thank you.
Continue,
Thomas.
Right?
Yeah, keep going, Thomas, because this is a really important point. The universe is alive. It's conscious. It has feelings.
Mm-hmm.
Not just other humans of your kind. Not of your kind, even the nasty ones, etc., etc. You know, everybody has consciousness, everything.
That's right. I remember one time when I was 17 years old, I was at my family's place down the road here. Which at that time it was a weekend house because we lived in Houston area. But we came up here on the weekends, so I had the best of both worlds. I grew up in the city and every weekend I was out in the woods doing something. And so, one morning I was, woke up in my bedroom and I was still sleeping, but there was a whole bunch of crows. There was 7 crows in a tree that were calling as loud as they could right outside my bedroom window. So I went outside, and I went over to the 68 Bronco we had for River Bottom Adventures, and I pulled out my 12-gauge, threw 3 rounds in it, and walked quietly towards the back of the house and where those crows were calling at. And when I got around there, I didn't aim at them, but I aimed to the left of them, and I lobbed 3 rounds out there. And all the crows were gone. And then I looked on the ground near my bedroom window, and I said good morning to him and went back in the house. Let him take care of his meal and go wherever he wants to. It was a red-tailed hawk with a rabbit that he'd killed, and the crows were trying to get it away from him. And he sat there and ate his morning meal, his breakfast, uninterrupted, because those crows were interrupting the one thing that is my major, 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 major pet peeve: waking me up while I'm sleeping.
I stopped the set of crows getting a bird's nest the other day because they have a big old dumpster to get into, so I gave them heck, and they left. There was 3 of them. It's like, okay, guys, I think we're going to stand up and take our mother back and tell her and feel with her to help us all get through this.
There's a very interesting video, if anybody would like to see it, on YouTube. If you put in red-tailed hawk and bald eagle and search, you'll see a video where it shows an eagle sitting on its nest, and a red-tailed hawk comes flying in like it's going to take that eagle out. Instead, the eagle takes it out right there in the nest. Eagle didn't even have to go hunting to get food. It came right to its doorstep.
Thomas, that's a very interesting story. I build a red cedar house on the south branch of the Pier Marquette. On the Pier Marquette, I live on the river bottom here in Michigan. And when I was building the house, I was doing some dozing, moving sand around the front yard, and all of a sudden I felt these two droplets on my face, or on my head. And I look up, and I see this hawk, it had a salmon, he just got out of the river in front of the house, and then all of a sudden off to the the east of him I see an eagle. And all of a sudden that eagle just makes a dive bomb at that hawk and just hits that hawk, and the hawk drops the fish, the eagle swarms down, nails it, takes off back to its nest. There's about 7 nestings around here. And 2 weeks later, and I didn't have a camera with me, but it was the most wonderful sight I could see. And 2 weeks later, I'm out working again in the yard, and I look up and I see this, I'm assuming it's the same hawk and the same eagle. This time, the hawk goes at the eagle. Never phases the eagle. The eagle just keeps flying with his fish. So I definitely know the story there, what you just said. Wonderful. Yeah.
And the one thing I noticed when I started seeing bald eagles around here again, they were going to into that stoop, I guess you'd call it, where they fold their wings and they dive.
Yep.
And I'm guessing because there's so many bald eagles in this area now that fish was not the only thing on their diet anymore. I'm sure that squirrels or maybe somebody's cat or something like that here in this town, I'm sure they were on the menu as well. So
yeah,
because they were up there at a good 200 or 300 feet, and they would fold their wings and dive at 90 miles an hour, and they disappear. I'm like, where the hell are you going? So they're hunting more than just fish now.
It's usually mice and rats.
Don't go away, we'll be back in a few minutes. Welcome back to Journeys with JP. Tonight I have on the line here Mona Radler and Wally Ladd and Thomas Hughes. And indeed, we were talking, well, I've been talking about this old story, you know, and everybody's got a piece of the puzzle. And there are bits that I don't know, bits that I might have left out of that story. I would like to invite you in this hour, if you have any part of that story that is missing, to bring that in. And I'm talking about this ancient story. What do you know about how it all started? Thomas?
What story are you referring to?
Well, the one about the interdimensional criminals who arrived on Earth. You know, they blew up the planet of Maldek, and the Sasquatch arrived here, and, you know, the planetary defense grid and the Black Knight and all this ancient history, things that have been going on for a long time, the Roman Empire, Babylonian Empire, the, you know, the tall whites who were behind the whole thing, the Jesuits, the Vatican, and the legal system which we're, you know, today. Any, you know, like, how does that get here? It all seems to have, like, come ready-made. So it's already been here. So it's already existing. You know?
Yeah, one of the things that, in recent times that, I've watched, as cheesy as it may be, or as good a sci-fi movie as it may be, one of the stories that, accurately portrays what did happen here, is Cowboys and Aliens. As silly as it sounds. And I've even asked our friend Olivia why she keeps coming up in movies, because the female star in that movie is Olivia Wilde. Of course, it's not our Olivia, but I'm sitting there going, wow. Wow, they're really telling this stuff. I mean, they're portraying it in what, 1800s New Mexico or Arizona. It was a lot longer ago than that. But there are movies that they're putting out there that show the actual and factual of what happened here. John Carter is another good one. It shows what happened here. And the whole thing, if you watch that movie and look at the Thrall, who are controlling everything, as the Archons, it really shows a lot. I don't know if you've seen that movie or not.
So this is the white guy, the very, very pale, like almost almost the kind of negative white, a white that absorbs color, if you can have one, skinned people that would become a soldier or become a cat, or, you know, they were shapeshifters. They would appear, they had their own technology which would enable other people to see them as something else.
Well, yes.
This is what we know that the Archons can do, isn't it? And that, yes, there is a sound. What Cliff High says is that there is a sound that causes this shielding to break down. And it's a sound that a human being can make, or you can make it by means of some machine that was involved something made of brass.
Yes, the clue in that whole movie as to the actual and factual of it is when they present themselves to one of the factions that's warring on Mars, and he tells the guy, "We represent the goddess." When he says that, that's the dead giveaway to me. That's because I know that God is all things. It's not just male, it's female as well. And it's the goddess that allows herself to be placed in a planet, so to speak. If you can imagine that, because the planet itself is the producer of life. And it's the male counterpart that seeds the life. But the woman is the carrier and the grower of life. So men are really only needed for one thing. That's for a little bit of hand cream. Once that's done, it's over. All you got to do is support the woman, maybe go to Lamaze class with her, whatever. I'm trying to make a joke out of this. 50-50, I know. In any case, that's what tipped it off for me.
So you're saying that a lot of this goddess teaching is actually still separative. Because it's, instead of saying it's a male god, it's a female god. It's like, let's go from a patriarchy back to a matriarchy. Whereas we need to recognize our essential duality, unity, divinity relationship.
Well, that would be the whole premise behind coming back into balance. Realizing that no one is greater than anyone else. No gender is greater than anyone else. No color is greater than anyone else. We're all pieces of a puzzle. Or brushstrokes on a painting. And we all contribute. That's something that everyone is going to realize before this is over with. Or they can go somewhere else.
Very good analogy. Imagine the tiny little brushstroke that shows the very, very subtle smile of the Mona Lisa. Not being there. As you say, we're all brushstrokes.
Well, if you forgot to put a brushstroke in, you have a little white spot on the painting because it's a white canvas you're painting on. And, hey, there's no brushstroke here. What are you going to do? Well, you know.
Swoosh.
Choice.
Yeah.
So.
There's been a lot of movies that have been showing everyone the actual and factual. Iron Man 3, for instance. You know, the bad guy in that movie, he looked at Tony Stark and he said, you know, terrorists are very easy to manufacture. You know, Gaddafi, Bin Laden, and now we have the Mandarin. That was the terrorist that he was producing to get what he wanted. So they're telling you right in movies now, Gaddafi, Bin Laden, now Mandarin. How plain can it be?
Yeah, and still people don't believe it. Oh, I saw that in a movie. They still don't get it. The movie is not a movie. It's a documentary. You get more fiction in your news Anyway, back to the story. So the story of these people who arrived here and have molded society, have created what we call society that appears to be like a modern thing, but is actually so a distant past future thing. Bizarre. Anyway, cycles. Backwards and forwards. Time travel. Very strange. You know, as soon as you start time traveling, things get complicated. They really do. So it's like going around in circles. You have to chase someone around in circles and then come back round the spiral that you've just gone down in order to undo the things. You know, it's like Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. Remember to do this later in the future, to go back into the past, to put this here, to, so that I can pick it up now. Huh.
Yeah.
It's a mess.
I just watched a movie the other day, White House Down, with Jamie Foxx and Channing Tatum, about the White House being taken over. And Jamie Foxx said it right there in the movie, as the President of the United States, he was saying that, you know, he's been working hard to overcome and basically neutralize or make happy the military-industrial complex. So they're telling everyone right there in that movie that the military-industrial complex has basically been neutralized. That's why you're, that's why we've seen all this stuff, this alleged general that prevented a false flag nuclear bomb going off in South or North Carolina, wherever it was, here a few months ago, and other things. And the powers that were are not happy about this, and it's obvious because they're over in the Ukraine trying to do something. It's not going to work.
And taking it back up to today, you know, the Ukraine, that's, this is all this area that they were originally inhabiting. And what's under the ground? In a line, 18 of them. 18 pyramids underground in the Crimea.
Duncan and Fanny has talked about, if you have enough people, and Dave, this is what I was talking about the other night on the show, Dave Corso's experienced this. When all those, young people got off that helicopter in, Cambodia, they all focused on the same thing, and one person directed it. All holding hands, they all directed it, and every Cambodian tiger soldier was electrocuted. But people like Dave, all they saw was a blinding flash, because the electricity was not meant for them. So that's why he saw a blinding flash and got knocked backwards, because being shocked to death was not what they were trying to do to him, because he was there to make sure those kids got out safely. He didn't know what they were doing there. But Duncan's talked about that, and Dave's experienced it. So when you put enough people together and they focus on the same thing, you can build pyramids out of 50-ton blocks.
I agree.
You know, this is so interesting. Because when we started out talking about words and sounds, and I was, JP, I wanted to bring up tree knocking because I wanted, you know, to talk about Thomas, and this is just so fascinating. And that's why I was, one reason I was bringing up words and sounds, because I was working my way towards tree knocking. And all of a sudden, here comes Thomas. I think this is just wonderful. Wonderful. Thank you for coming.
Okay, so, Thomas, let's talk tree knocking then. By popular demand, tree knocking.
Tree knocking is a form of communication between the Sasquatch people. But they always know what they're saying with the tree knocks. A lot of times, when they're gathering for a hunt, they'll tree knock to let everybody else in the party know that they're in location before they ambush deer or wild hogs or elk or whatever the case may be. So that's why that happens the way it does.
Woodpeckers also tree knock. Because that's, yes, another part of the communication, because everything does have its signal. And the same with the plants. They used to call them signatures.
Yes.
I was out with a dog for a while, so I missed probably the better part of a communication, but...
You went out with a dog?
This is great.
You went out with a dog?
Yeah, it was her potty time. Plus the smoke, yeah, and, we had break. But, be one with it. That's the best thing to do, is just camouflage yourself as a physical being. Be your spirit self, and you will have so many magical mystery tours. It's so much fun. I want some of those mushrooms, though, because I like to go a little further sideways instead of always forward or backward.
So, I was going to ask you about tree knocking, because I know that there is crystalline structure within a tree, made of silica, and that's what ash is and all that stuff. but when you hit a tree, you generate a piezoelectric signal. Is that signal picked up telepathically by the hairy beagle?
It is, but other senses are activated as well. The body feels it, because the roots of the tree go all the way into the ground, and their bodies are sensitive enough to feel that energy wave that's generated by somebody that's hitting a tree. So when one of them, obviously being bigger and stronger, hits a tree, it makes a more resounding sound like when you hit a bell, that's a really big bell. Whereas when a human hits a side of a tree, it doesn't have the same resonance. It sounds more like a small bell, like that.
Right.
Great move.
So,
do you think you'd find these places in a different kind of thing, like how the earth, because they'd be natural creatures and we know how to walk with the earth. Do you find them mostly like by water?
No, I mean, it's really your connection with the life around you. And a Sasquatch walks up to a tree with a dead stick, a deadfall log, or even a rock, and hits it real hard. That tree knows what it's trying to do, because it's already communicated with the tree, and it resounds. It makes a resounding sound that in the ground and in the air, that can travel for 15, 20 miles. So,
yeah, I love fractal.
Yeah. Well, I mean, imagine if you were to take a ruler and hold one end on the table and flick the end, it'll go dong, 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 dong. Imagine if that ruler was 60 feet tall and you hit it with a stick, it would resound just like that. And the frequency would be subsonic. You wouldn't hear it, but that subsonic frequency would travel, hundreds of miles. Big.
Well, that's why.
And it's a bit like flicking. I can feel it. If somebody touches my face where my beard is, if somebody touches one hair on my beard, I can hear it. I hear it's like a crackle. And if somebody runs their hand through my beard, I can hear this kind of sound. No joke. I can hear it. So, that's analogous to someone hitting a tree.
Yeah. Yes, and Indians, and you can see an example of this in the movie Hidalgo.
Wonderful.
The Indians
movie.
Always. Yes, it is. One of the things that Indians always knew, that if you put something in the ground and put your ear next to it, whatever you're putting in the ground, and in the movie he puts a knife in the ground and he listens. The energy that's resonating through the ground will cause vibrations within the metal or within the wood, whatever you're putting in the ground. And your ear can hear that up to about 10 miles away.
I do that on an engine of a car. Take a screwdriver and you can find, just a short distance there. But
Irish stethoscope, yep.
Yeah.
Neat.
But so there's a lot you can hear just by sticking a knife in the ground or I don't know, whatever you want to, an ice pick for that matter, and letting whatever is happening on the ground within 10 miles of you, you can hear it.
Wow, I feel guilty going out and using my chainsaw to get firewood for the house now. Just what that chainsaw does.
Well, I don't like much machines either. It does. It's not a good parallel part of a good universe.
But I do thank Mother Earth for the tree, and I thank the tree for heat.
Yeah.
Yep, and I have to thank people who use chainsaws and are noisy. I'm sorry, that's the way. But this is the country that I live in. That's what we do here. We grow trees and cut them down. And then burn them. Great. What a life.
My goodness.
It's like we grow cows to slaughter to eat. You know, that's what the farm... I live on a farm. That's what we do. That's the way
you
of things.
You grow your own hops, too?
Hops? No. No. I am... just about as good at growing potatoes and kale myself. That's mm-hmm. what I do now. Yeah. But, yes, it's been spring. We're here at the springtime, and it just seems to have whizzed by. What's this thing about time? What's your... Wally, where have you been... have you noticed time has changed for you? How have you changed... to respect time?
You know, as we get older, you know, when we were in school, we used to sit and watch the clock. Man, 3 o'clock, you just wanted that 3 o'clock to come, but it felt like it would just never come. And then when you get to 50 plus, I'm 57, you can't stop that hand from going around. It's going so fast. I mean, today's Monday, and the next thing I'll realize is Friday's here already. But, you know, seeing the people that I've met just recently within the last, you know, 6, 8, 9 months, my time has slowed down a little bit because I'm listening now. I'm finding some true people. And when you're not around true people, the time just seems to go by so quickly because, you know, you're not really supposed to be about, but, you know, as you meet the people and listen, not just hear, but listen, it seems to slow down so you have time to grasp it. Does that make any sense?
Well, yeah, because we're not here for the material part of being slave to an idea that isn't of Earth. And that's what we've been bamboozled into, is a big old lie that we're supposed to give ourselves away to others like that. Excuse me, but I ain't nobody's pool boy.
You know, the other thing I noticed is people's eyes are changing now. There seems to be, you know, more compassion, maybe more love. In fact, Helena Phoenix was on a program last night, and she was saying the same thing. And it's just amazing to start seeing this change start happening. And it's just recently that I've noticed these changes start to happen. So something has happened in the timeline for the good.
Mutant noodles.
If you want to grab that picture, JP. And then read what it says and describe it to everyone in the show listening. I think everybody might get a bit of humor out of that.
There we go. Let's have a look. It's still coming across here, but Mutant Noodle says, 3 alien races rule this planet, and there just so happens to be 3 top religions, Christianity, Judaism, and Islam. I don't know if anybody thinks about that, but anyway, let's have a look here.
I can't. Oh, there we go.
Okay, so there's this. He's obviously a traveler, a seeker. He's got a rucksack with a sleeping bag on it, and he's sitting on a park bench with a man with sandals and a white robe and cape and long hair and beard, you know, the archetypical Jeebus. And so the guy's asking him, asking Jeebus, so why do you allow things like famine, war, suffering, disease, crimes, homelessness, despair, etc. exist in our world? And Jeebus replies, interesting that you should bring that up, as I was about to ask you the exact same question. So, thank you, Thomas. There's what you asked me to read.
Yeah. I found that very humorous.
You think that's funny, huh?
Well, yeah. I do, because people not only allow this to exist, but they encourage it to exist.
Right. Very sad. We have been trained to think that it's such the fact of our existence.
Yeah, well, you see, the thing is that, you know, you say the word trained. Drain means you've been traumatically mind-controlled. You've been conditioned.
At one time, yeah.
Yeah, we all have. And that's the, this is the toxic mind stuff that keeps us from being real. And that, you know, has happened to us lifetime after lifetime after lifetime. One of the things that is happening now is that, and this might explain some weird activity in people's lives at the moment, is that parts of you are returning home, so to speak. As the ley lines are becoming cleared, those bits of you that were stuck in the ley lines in order to keep the whole planet running slowly are being released, and they're coming back to you in the form of other relationships, perhaps, that you may have had in past lives where that person was kind of a friend or something like that, where the energy is stored. It's like a kind of escrow. Like, here's your key. This is who you are. And this is happening called, this is a process called recapitulation. And it's happening now because we need to be whole as we go through this shift, and we need to get hold of all the other parts of us. So it may would be very worthwhile to examine things that trigger you emotionally, everybody, this time. You know, I'm not just talking to Mona and Thomas, but things that trigger you emotionally are a surefire signal that there's an issue that you need to be addressing. And a lot of it is about regaining a part of you that is missing, because it may have been tortured in a past life, and you got stuck in that pain there, and part of you is stuck there. This happens. People talk about soul retrieval. There are two ways it can happen. You can pull it back, or it can be released from where it's stuck. For instance, it may be stuck in a, you know, you've been part of a ritualized situation. May be interesting. You may find yourself drawn to certain places where these things may have happened. That might be possible, that the part of you is still stuck there, and that it might be, you know, you might just sit there and meditate for a while, see what might happen there. What do you think, guys?
I just went to YouTube, and I have no clue why. Did you just say somebody say something about YouTube?
No, I didn't say anything about YouTube. I said something, but maybe part of you is stuck in YouTube. Maybe part of your soul is trapped in YouTube, and you keep going there because it's there. Someone.
Well, I haven't uploaded my last video, so maybe that's it. But
maybe
no.
Your last lifetime has been downloaded by somebody by a mistake.
I heard every word you said, and for my sadness today was knowing that two belligerent human beings left a baby in a car for 8 days without food and water and let that child die. Now, where would that have come from? You know what I'm saying? What was the other one? Because coconut oil has been made such a flamboyant healer, orangutans and other wildlife are being destroyed for our gluttony. Okay, so those two things brought a little tears to my eyes, and basically, that's what I got out of what you said. I don't need to relieve anything else, it was just that today thing, you know what I mean? Because I'm only living in the moment, and these have been good moments. Thank you, guys.
Yeah. The link I just put in the chat, JP, is what they've been able to do in North Carolina with saving the red wolves so that they're not on the endangered species list. So that's a really nice one to watch.
I live in Asheville. I didn't realize this was going on. That's cool.
Yeah, there's a place called Alligator River in North Carolina. And it's a red wolf sanctuary. And they take people out in the woods there and get all the people to howl, and you can hear all the red wolves howling back to you, and you can hear it right there in that video.
Now, see, now I know why I went to YouTube, because I guess I preconceived him saying it.
Someone do a soul retrieval, please. Anyway, meanwhile, the last half hour, we are on tonight's journey. Now, back to the topic, right? My topic was the story of how we get here, how we, you know, where this so-called evil empire arose. And so if the Sasquatch arrived here about 50,000 years ago, about the same time as these other people, do they have stories of these folk? Do they have knowledge? They must have knowledge. There must be a record of these interlopers into Earth and what happened and why they were here, and probably not a little peeved that they were the cause of the destruction of their planet.
Well, when you go back in the history, the reason the Archons were set up here the way they were in this experiment is because they were the ones that thought we weren't worth existence. So the experiment started with them in charge of everything, testing us to see if they could separate us from Source. And if they could prove their point that we weren't worth existence. And if they couldn't, then we proved our point to test us. You can't separate us from Source. So 5,250 years ago, there were some individuals that came into this galaxy that were, shall we say, unsavory, and they negotiated with the Archons, and the Archons could see that their agenda was aligned with their own. So they invited those individuals to come in. The Archons did that because they knew that they could control the outcome, knew that they could control whoever won the conflict. So the Draco and Hydra Reptilians and the Orion Greys and Thelons that Chris Thomas talks about and others started coming here and interfering, and the Archons allowed it. So when I heard Bob Dean say in his interview with Clifford Stone and Kerry Cassidy, he said, if you look at this world as a trust or an estate, the original executors of said trust are back, and they are making sure that everyone follows the agreed upon terms so that the experiment can be ended. How's that for an explanation?
So, what point in that story did the estate owners leave?
That would be right after the experiment started, almost 26,000 years ago. They let them, they said, okay, do your best. We're not gonna interfere at all. Not until you come all the way back around the galaxy, 25,920 years from now. We are going to make sure that everyone is following the agreed upon terms before this experiment ever started. And they started doing that back in 1997 when the last treaty between a leader of the United States and an off-world species, when that treaty ended, which would be the 1947 treaty that Eisenhower allowed to be put in place.
And and they broke just about as much as they could. They really took the piss, as we say.
Yes, they abrogated the treaty on so many different levels that, well, Eisenhower wasn't sure that we were going to be able to rid ourselves of them. In fact, quite a few of them went into what Eisenhower calls the military-industrial complex. And we're working scenes from there. Because they really wanted to control this place, and if they could control it, then they could get humans to accept that they were a slave race and that there are aliens and they could use us for their bay. Unfortunately for them, that never happened.
So, here on Prison Planet Earth with the Black Knight. Oh, did they say, do you have any, intelligence about the Black Knight satellites that I was talking about as well?
No, I don't have any information on that, but I can point out things that have been averted. The first thing they tried to do when the original executors of the estate were back, and it was laid to rest in a big freaking hurry, was the whole Y2K bug. That never manifested because the original executors of said estate, or trust, were waving their fingers and sounded just like the big guy in Jurassic Park. You didn't say the magic word.
Can I say something about the satellite thing?
Sure.
Because I had one from, I'd say it was late August all the way through January, and it was always the same sphere at the same spot. Now, if the planet's turning, that thing would have been, you know, in a different place at a different time, but each exact same time of day. I have videos of it. And when you were talking about the Black Knight, right, JP, with Steve?
Yeah, the satellite.
Yeah, I bet I saw it. It was just one of those things. It would not go away. It would not turn. You couldn't put an app on it to say what it was. Like if it was a Sirius or Mars or something else like that. It was a very interesting phenomenon that happened. Very interesting.
Well, Mars is very bright in the sky, brothers and sisters. Very. This planet may be a prison, but it's a hell of an adventure. Well, indeed. It's quite a ride.
Quite an area to roam in, also.
It's a shipwreck, that's space.
What did you say, Walt?
It's quite an area to roam in, being a prison planet. We're free to go anywhere on the planet we want to go. Other than...
No, we get a choice. We get a choice between heaven or hell. And it's how we make it. Do we make our life here? I mean, I could say all kinds of things that are ugly, bad, and disgusting for what I've had to go through, but it's not. It's a blessing to me. Because I will not do unto others that I do not want to have done unto me. We get to choose. Do we want to live a life of because of, or do we want to live a life of, let's go do it, you know? To each his own free will, right?
Well, and what goes along with that free will, it's whether you, once you have knowledge, you have the responsibility of using that knowledge the way it was designed to be used. And so it's your free will choice to be responsible or not. And that's why a lot of the powers that were, that's why they didn't want to have certain knowledge, because that made them responsible. So they didn't want to know about it.
Yeah, I have quite a bit of problem with that. I'm Polish and Ukrainian, and I have quite a problem with that.
Yeah.
And six called. And, you're exactly right, Thomas. That's... You know, once you have the knowledge, and, you know, sometimes I get so frustrated that I just, you gotta put it right in front of my face. I can't see it if you don't put it right in front of my
face.
Oh,
did you hear yourself? I can't see it. But anyway,
Thank you, word teacher.
For whatever it is, we are creating it. And when we can figure out what we want, it gets a whole lot easier and a whole lot more fun. And then people want to come along. They want happiness. They don't want this torture that they're under. So if we can set a good example of living our now for who we are in being, because it sure wasn't the same person 15 minutes ago, or it won't be the same person 15 minutes coming up. So, you know... I want some of them bison pies, man.
Oh, yes, beautiful creatures. And then we slaughter them and eat them. Eating whale. Imagine, apparently it tastes like salty beef. Fishy beef.
I was thinking more mushrooms.
Mushroom soup. Well, I have to say that I've been more and more vegetarian, going towards eating a diet of grown things rather than things that have been killed. I don't know. I haven't fallen apart yet. I think I'm feeling better. I actually feel muscles in my stomach these days. You know, I can, like, hit my stomach and it's hard.
Ooh.
But it's not, that's not saying that I'm actually thin or anything, but I can feel like getting better.
That will turn to muscle, it's a natural occurrence.
Yeah, but you know, it's just, I feel like I'm kind of shrinking back into how I ought to be, and that I've been eating all this fluffy, yeasty stuff, and I've become yeasty and fluffy and expanded. And slowly I'm going back to a kind of normal position. And I never realized that that's what it was. Because bread is something that's hard to give up. It's another addiction. You know, we're talking again about addictions and my grandfather being a sweet shop owner and being a sugar and tobacco dealer, basically. You know, toxin dealers.
Yeah, my cousin.
Sup, dude?
I've really knocked out my sweets and I feel good. I've been splitting a lot of wood. I've heated the house all winter with wood and my body is sore, but I feel so good. I you know, my fluff is gone. I've basically given up candy and a lot of sweets and started eating better and the other thing I'm not eating as much meat. And I'm finding when you don't eat meat, you become closer to the animals, because when you eat meat, you have a scent as a carnivore, and animals look at you as, you know, the hunter. And when you go more to a vegetarian or less meat diet, you start losing that scent and you can get closer to the animals. I have found herds of deer. There's a track right down the side of my yard. In fact, little Joey, my little black cocker, he can hear them going down the side between me and my neighbor. We're kind of in the woods, and they've got a track right down the river. And I've noticed since I've given up meat, or not given up, but really cut back on it, I have more deer around me.
That's so beautiful, Wally, because that is exactly what's going on. I live on a farm, right, like I say, and a couple of... sheds away is the cow shed, and they're very timid, but they've now started coming up to me and you know, they're young bullocks, but they're only like 6 months old. They're kind of big, just great big baby things, and it's so lovely when they'll lick you, you know, that they so trust you. It's lovely. Mm-hmm. and they're huge but completely benign, you know, love creatures.
You know what's kind of neat is letting them suck on your finger when they're small with no teeth. That's really, I just think that is just neat, because I used to go to a dairy farm and help a friend of mine milk cows, because I love raw milk. I do not like pasteurized milk. But, and even the animals, when you're not eating meat, even the domestic animals are a lot different towards you.
Yeah, definitely. And Yeah, so it's very, very interesting to see the changes, and the changes in my relationship, for instance, the plants. I now have to say sorry, you know, or thank you, and sorry when I trim the hedge. This is ridiculous.
Oh, it is not.
You know, it's just like,
I've been on this for 35 years in lemongrass, and I thought I'd be a smart person and take an X-Acto knife because I'm a commercial artist, so I could handle an X-Acto knife. Dang, if that plant didn't cut me right and left, and good thing I had other herbs like lamb's ear and that around it to stop it, because that X-Acto blade went straight down the center of my thumb. So any time after that, I learned to ask and say nice, and yes, you do. They give you so much love back if you give them love with intent to go, you're nummy, I love you. You know?
You know, we were talking about the buffalo there. Has anybody read the book Wounded Knee by Dr. Robert Cummings? He was a doctor that took medicine out to Wounded Knee. He lived about 2 miles away from me, and he raised buffalo also. Wonderful creatures. In fact, the fence was, you know, you see guardrail along the expressway, usually by a ditch or a bridge. That's what the fence had to be made out of, because if you used a barbed wire fence, those buffalo would walk right through it.
Yeah. They don't feel pain like other bovine do.
Oh, no, and they're strong. We used to ride them.
That's because their skins are made of leather.
Yeah, kind of.
Yeah, like you wear boots, you don't care, do you? Right? You know, they live boots. Well, they have boots. Anyway, so we're continuing the journey. Meanwhile, we've got this, this group of, interdimensional nutters, that have been running the show, and now they've been brought to, or are being in the process of, almost completing the process of neutralization, soon to start the process of revealing of really what's going on to everybody, not just people who have been really trying to find out, but revealing to everybody what's really been going on, and in fact moving forward as a member of Galactic Society, that we're not an insular. It's like suddenly America discovers there's the rest of the world, you know.
Thomas, are there any Sasquatch in Michigan?
Of course there are.
There are. That's why I want to learn, because I would love to communicate with them. So if you have any special, you can, and there's a guy on the river bottom on the south branch of the Pere Marquette River that's interested in talking with you.
Okay.
So I'll contact you just so I know proper ways and maybe get introductions, because it's just, I have such a nice, this property has been the family for over 40 some years, almost 48 years. And there's just such a connection, and it's such a peaceful property, and you know, I enjoy walking out back in the woods, and I'd like to meet him.
Well, I'm going to give you a website here. This is from Michigan. It's called the Michigan Recording Project, and if I can get it back over here.
Put that down in our chat.
Yeah, so I'm going to put it in the chat right there underneath the current link. Right there.
Okay.
And there's a recording portal on that website. And if you go to the August recordings of 2008 and listen to the one on the bottom right of that page, they're all lined up in two rows. But the one on the bottom right, one of those calls I've heard in person before. So I know that they're valid recordings, and I've emailed with those guys before, but they would never come on my radio show, and they would never talk in person. All they would do was email, because they've probably been ridiculed to death themselves.
Okay. See, I'm looking to see where to... I got a page here. Where do I go on this?
Recording portal?
I've got project overview.
On the left-hand side, there's a recording portal. If you click on that, it shows you all the dates of the recordings they've gotten.
Okay, now, okay, I see it now.
Yeah, if you go to the August 30-31, click on that one, it will open another page with, I think it's 14 recordings or so. But the one on the bottom right, you can play that one. The third call in that recording, the real raspy call, I've heard that in person just 25 miles from my house at another location here in Texas.
Oh, wow. So, without leaving much dead air, this is, I've just posted it in the chat box. This is mivocals.moonfruit.com. What does that stand for? MI Vocals? What's that? Michigan?
I'm sure that's just the way they spelled my vocals.
Michigan, isn't it?
Yes.
MI, yeah. MI Vocals, or Vocals. Anyway, whatever it is, it's a series of historical recordings from various years gone by, with recordings from physical locations with little pictures. Very nice. Anyway, so this going back. Anyway, Thomas.
Yeah, the recordings themselves, Wally, they somewhere in Michigan, about 10 or 20 miles from the Canadian border, is where they were at. And they used several recorders to, and the map shows you where they've got the recorder set up. And these hairy folks there in Michigan were just walking in and, calling to them and breaking sticks and hitting trees real hard and all sorts. So it's very much, the people that I'm used to down here in Texas doing the same kind of thing.
Okay. I'm looking to see how to save this page, and I'm not finding a way to save it.
Well,
let's see. I'll figure it out.
All I can say is good luck with that, and I hope everybody listening to the show enjoys the recordings on that one as well.
Thank you so much, Thomas. I appreciate this.
You're most welcome.
And I will be in contact with you.
Well, anytime you see me on, just hit me up and on Skype, and
I'll do that now.
We can talk.
I'll do that.
So, Thomas, I think you've got a bit of consultancy on cryptozoology.
Seems that way.
Coming up, and if anybody does indeed wish to contact Thomas as a consultant of things he knows, because he's a wealth of information. Like I say, he's got, if you call him, you'll get the piece of the puzzle that you have, and it'll give him a piece of his puzzle. That's what we do. So, Thomas, do you want to give your details out?
Well, people can reach me through email at Thomas, letter H after Thomas, 515 at hotmail.com. I've had that email address since 2003, so it's still good. Other than that, they can go to Blog Talk Radio and listen to the shows that I used to do under Sasquatch and Spirituality. That was the name of the show. It was, I actually changed it to The Great Turtle Island towards the end, but it'll all show, my archives will all show up on Blog Talk Radio. They're still there. So, welcome to it. I had some very interesting guests myself, including JP.
That's right. That's where I found you, wasn't it?
That's where I was simulcasting with Dave there towards the end of doing that Blog Talk Radio. Yeah. I was on there when you met me.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I'm still Prometheus. It's always Prometheus. So, we're coming to the end of the show. Wally, do you have any final messages?
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, JP. I enjoy being on your show, and thank you, Mona, and Thomas, thank you. Since I've heard you, I wanted to meet you, and I guess the energy was just put out there, and you popped in. Wonderful. Thank you very much.
Mona, your 60 seconds start now.
Now. Me, myself, and I. That's my now. Peace out, y'all. It was a great show. Thank you, even though we didn't get a reading, and I really would like to hear more about that horse thing. And we could even go a little blood moon sometime. Later out.
Oh, sorry. Wrong mic. Horse thing, Mona?
The horse. Dark horse? What's the horse thing? We were talking about it a few minutes ago.
The Black Knight.
Come on, JP.
The Black Knight, you mean?
It's a Black Knight. It's not a horse.
It's not a horse. It's a satellite that looks like a weird lump of rock flying through the air. Or, well, okay. So it looks like it actually looks like a kind of statue of an angel with a great wing. With one sort of wing out the, like a more of a fin than the wing kind of thing. Anyway, that was tonight's journey. I don't know where it went. I don't know where it's gone. And here we've arrived at the end.
Thank
you very much.